May it please the court, my name is Danielle Jaffe. I'm an attorney representing Mr. Crumpton on behalf of the Alternate Defense Counsel. Basically, I have a very brief argument pending questions from the court. Mr. Crumpton filed a motion for post-conviction relief many years ago. For reasons that are not discussed in the record, he did not litigate those motions right away. Finally, when I was appointed on the case, I asked the court to clarify the status of the case, and the court came back ruling that Mr. Crumpton's request for post-conviction relief was denied pursuant to Latches because he had rested on his rights. That was a final appealable order, which we appealed to this court. Basically, the Robbins case is controlling on this point. In Robbins versus People, if a court invokes the doctrine of Latches sua sponte, the court must give the defendant an opportunity to reply to the Latches claim. The court can't simply dismiss the claim, the defendant's claim, without giving the defendant an opportunity to rebut. In this case, the court issued a final appealable order denying Mr. Crumpton's motion for post-conviction relief, finding that Mr. Crumpton had waited too long, Latches. But the court did not give Mr. Crumpton the opportunity to explain what the cause of the delay was. So we are asking that the case be remanded to the district court for further proceedings, specifically so that Mr. Crumpton has the opportunity to explain to the court why he delayed pursuing his post-conviction motion.
And to rebut the claim of prejudice.
What?
And to rebut the claim of prejudice.
Sorry, yes, and to rebut the claim of prejudice.
The trial judge presumed prejudice, I guess we could say, yes?
Yes.
And your client will be able to come, if we were to remand this case, your client would be able to come forward with some argument or evidence that would rebut the presumption of prejudice. And that's what you want an opportunity to do.
Correct. I believe my client has a very strong argument in that regard, Your Honor.
Okay. And you also say that he can explain the delay. So just so I'm clear, this motion that he wants now to be heard on its merits was sort of filed in July of 2000, I think. Mm-hmm. And I say sort of because there's no file stamp date on it. We're presuming it was filed in July.
Yeah.
Of 2000. I take it there's no issue on the part of your client that it was filed at any time later than that. He's saying he's with the date of July of 2000, right?
I believe that's the date. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. The first time he notified the court, or the first time I guess the court was notified that that motion had not been ruled upon, was your motion requesting, or your paper requesting a status conference, correct?
As far as I'm aware, although the court had been involved in the case previously.
And to appoint counsel, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah. But never was there a request for that particular motion to be ruled upon, as I understand.
Well, there was an appeal, and the court said we dismissed it because it had not been ruled upon.
Correct.
That was done back in 2002, which was 2 years after the motion was filed. It should have been called to the court's attention that it hadn't been ruled on.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Has anyone suggested what he should have done other than that to get the court to rule?
I'm not sure. Could you rephrase the question, Your Honor?
Is there any indication of what the defendant should have done in order to get the court to rule?
I'm not sure what the defendant should have done other than either wait for a ruling from the court. In this case, Mr. Crumpton had private counsel. This isn't in the record on appeal, but just for explanation, Mr. Crumpton had counsel who assured him that he was on top of Mr. Crumpton's post-conviction motion. Private counsel, however, even though he assured Mr. Crumpton he was on top of the motion, took no action on the motion. And it was only several years later when Mr. Crumpton contacted the court and said, what's happening with my motion, that the public defender's office was first appointed and then withdrew, and then I was appointed. So at this point, what we're trying to do is resolve the July 2000 post-conviction motion, or letter, deemed a post-conviction motion, and get it resolved one way or the other. And all we're asking for is a chance to go back and explain to the trial court the fact that my client had ineffective assistance of post-conviction counsel, which led to the delay in pursuing his post-conviction motion. Pending other questions, I'd reserve.
I want to clarify something because I hadn't focused on this. Judge Roy points out that an attempt by your client to appeal the July 2000 Rule 35C motion was dismissed by this court for lack of a ruling on that motion. In other words, they found that there was some confusion about what the court had ruled on. It ruled on the supplement, I believe. The court had misinterpreted that the supplement related to a different motion, I think. Mm-hmm. But in any event, the effort to appeal was turned down by this court in 2002 because I'm just looking at the order. It says it's dismissed without prejudice. Was it made clear to the defendant at that time that the reason it was being sent back was because the motion had not been ruled on?
And that is correct, Your Honor. It was made clear, and Mr. Crumpton had counsel who he relied on to pursue the claim.
So this is all going to be part of your explanation, I suppose.
Also, notice to the court that it hadn't been ruled on.
Okay, I understand. I assume this has to be sorted out. If there's going to be a remand hearing, that's when you're going to present this, not to us, of course. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Seems like sort of a reasonable request to me. Why is it an unreasonable request to send it back for a hearing on latches?
Well, just for the record, Catherine Hanson, registration 25464, appearing on behalf of the people. Basically, this is exactly why we should have an affirmative pleading requirement for latches. In 2005, which is years after the defendant filed his motion, 3 years after the Court of Appeals dismissed the case for lack of a ruling, the Court of Appeals, so the Supreme Court in Robbins made it very clear, latches applies to 35C motions, and latches can be invoked sua sponte by the trial court. Even after that opinion, which he's presumed to know the law, the defendant, he waits. He waits until 2008 before he even files anything. And that is just motions for appointment of counsel. And then he waits even longer after 2007 when Valdez comes out and says, clearly, latches applies for not only failure to file a timely motion, but failure to seek a timely ruling.
Let's assume hypothetically the record will show if there's a remand hearing that during 2002 to 2008, he's furiously writing letters to his appointed counsel or whoever his lawyer was, the public defender. Do something, do something, do something, and the guy's doing nothing, or the person's doing nothing. That may be a basis for a justifiable delay, yes? We just don't know. We don't know what the record will show.
They acknowledge that justifiable excuse can be a defense against latches. But the law is very clear that you have to plead justifiable excusable neglect. He never did that.
Excuse me, counsel, for interrupting. He did not. It's ironic the trial court cites Robbins. And under Robbins, unequivocally, it states that when latches is raised as a defense, the other party is entitled to be heard on it. Now, how do we, the Supreme Court case, we're bound by that case. How do we come back and say that it was latches, that the defendant should have done something, when apparently the trial judge ruled on the 35 without giving him notice that he was going to consider the issue of latches?
Well,
it was going to consider the trial court.
Okay, I have actually a twofold. I'd like to first talk about Robbins because, first of all, that language in Robbins is dicta. There's nothing that was not at issue in that opinion. And interestingly, if you look at the case that cites, that Robbins cites.
It's an 1897 case.
Right. And
civil case.
As hard as it is to read that case, what I got out of it was basically, in a situation where both parties have affirmatively stated we're not relying on latches, but the court says, wait a minute, I want to rely on latches in ruling on this case. In that situation, the party should have an opportunity to present evidence defending against latches because they would specifically affirmatively deny the opportunity to do so. They go on in that Hagerman case, and they specifically do say the court can do this sua sponte, can apply latches sua sponte if the record supports it. Now, The same situation comes up in the context of justifiable excusable neglect, and I'd like to shorten that just to say justifiable excuse, in 16.542 cases, where in Wiedemer they specifically said you have a duty to put that in your 35C motion if your motion is untimely.
Sure wasn't.
No, but...
So in 2000.
Right, and I'm analogizing.
Yeah.
So basically, but if you backtrack from there, the basis for that affirmative pleading requirement is the general law regarding 35C motions that say you have to set forth your grounds in the motion, and unless the motion, the file, and the record establishes grounds for relief, you're not entitled to a hearing. It's entitled to summary dismissal. And so what I'm asking this court to do, essentially, especially in light of the fact in Valdez, they specifically say that justifiable excuse is a defense to latches, he should be required to affirmatively plead that. And that
comes... When did he have an opportunity to plead it here?
He had 11 years to plead it.
But latches hadn't been applied.
No, but he had notice. Let's just say, and I'm not conceding this is the point at which he would first have notice, because in Robbins they acknowledge latches has been applied even before 16.5402. But even in Robbins was the first case where the court said the court can apply it sua sponte. So he has notice as of 2005. This court can do it sua sponte. In 2007, he has more notice. Latches applies to a failure to seek a ruling.
What was he supposed to do then? Ask for a ruling?
No. When he asked for a ruling, he needed to set forth alleged facts, just like with justifiable excuse, alleged facts which, if true, would constitute a defense to latches.
Even though latches has never been raised or asserted?
Yes. Because the court can sua sponte, even if the prosecution doesn't raise the time bar, the court can sua sponte, dismiss a case based on that, for a failure to affirmatively plead justifiable excuse. And I think the same rationale applies. If the defendant is on notice that an unreasonable and excessive delay can cause the trial court to dismiss a post-conviction motion or not rule on it on the basis of latches, if the defendant's on notice of that, which I don't think we can say he's not on notice of that in light of the case law.
The prosecutors never filed an opposition.
No.
To the Rule 35C saying it's too late, you should apply latches, there's unjust, nothing like that. No. Put him on notice that that might come up before the trial court when this was decided.
The prosecution didn't provide notice.
So the defendant would have had to anticipate what the trial court might have done in raising latches. And then you say, are you against it? In advance of the court even thinking that, and in advance even presented to him that there might be latches.
We do that with 16.542. The court can do it sua sponte. And so that's why we affirmatively require them, if there are facts justifying an untimely motion, if there are facts, we affirmatively require them to establish those. And that constitutes what Robbins talks about is the opportunity to...
16.5402 has a very specific time frame. If you're more than 3 years out, you better have an excuse for why you did it.
Latches is an equitable doctrine. What is too long a wait for one thing is not too long a wait for another.
Right,
and a lot of considerations go into that, what you're saying is the defendant must file a defense to latches, which hasn't even been raised, and he doesn't know at this point whether it has any merit. Well, he didn't know in 2005 that he might be barred by latches.
Well, he should. The court,
you should?
Yes, because the Supreme Court just said this court can sua sponte dismiss a motion based on latches. He's presumed to know the law.
And I presume a lot of people know the law. I have trouble presuming that somebody in prison who doesn't have an education and limited resources is that sophisticated that they would file a motion to defend something that has not been raised?
Well, okay, first of all, we have to. The law requires us to presume that the defendant knows the law.
The law doesn't require us to give very much weight to that presumption.
I respectfully disagree. I believe we have here in 2005 and in 2007, which is still 4 years before the request for a ruling. We have two specific cases talking about the application of latches to 35C rulings and motions and the fact that the court can raise it sua sponte. And so he had plenty of notice that latches can be applied to his to the ruling on his motion. And so yet he did nothing. He did not only did he not seek a ruling for 4 more years even after the second of those cases, he made no effort to explain the delay, yet he did so in connection with a motion filed in conjunction. And this is where I'd like to get, I mean, I can see you're maybe not quite so receptive to my
go ahead there, because I didn't see, I saw you made that point in your brief, and I don't see where in the proportionality review he explained the delay.
I looked for it, I didn't see it.
Okay, why don't you explain it to us? Tell us what it says then.
He basically claimed that he had filed a request for counsel back in 1993 or maybe 2003, I believe it was, which that is not in the record. And the court rejected that. And so he knew, he had the knowledge that, okay, at least his motion for proportionality review was very untimely, and he needed to establish justifiable excuse. He affirmatively pled it, the court addressed it, and rejected it. But not only that, let's go back to 2002. I mean, in 2002, he knew that he had a motion out there that had not been ruled on. From 2002 to 2008, he filed nothing. And I understand that counsel is attempting to bring in facts outside the record to persuade you that this is a case that needs to go back for a remand. But if that was the case, he should have put it in his motion seeking a ruling, saying, okay, I know it's been 11 years since I filed this motion, and under the law, you can apply latches to me sua sponte. So here's my reasons for why you shouldn't. That's his opportunity. I'm not saying Robbins is wrong necessarily, that he should be given an opportunity. I'm just saying his opportunity is similar to the opportunity to establish justifiable excuse. He has the opportunity to do it and should do so when he's seeking his ruling 11 years later. He didn't do so in this case. And even if this court is not inclined to create a rule of law that says that you're required to affirmatively plead a defense to latches before the trial court's ruling, because ideally the court could give notice. I've had other cases, latches cases, where the court does give notice and say, this may be a case of latches, can you file a response, hold a hearing? But what we're talking about is, in order to avoid cases like this, now we've added years to this case, the defendant should be required to affirmatively plead it, just like he does with justifiable excuse. If this court doesn't want to go that far and find that as a matter of law they were required to do it, I certainly think in this case, the question is, was he given the opportunity to do so? And he was given the opportunity to do so in any of the filings he filed, at least as of 2005, when he was on notice that the trial court could invoke this doctrine sua sponte, at least. And again, I'm not conceding that that's the point necessarily, because it's clear that latches could have been applied even well before 16504.02 was enacted in 1981. But I'm saying he had the opportunity. He filed numerous motions for counsel. He filed, there was lots of things going on before 2005 and after 2005. But even after counsel was appointed.
None of these motions to which you allude notified the court that there was a pending motion?
The defendant didn't ask for a ruling on his motion.
He certainly was asking that the motion be pursued.
But we don't know that. No, these were motions for appointment of counsel. There was some confusion.
For what purpose?
We don't really know. There was some confusion. Even the PD asked for clarification before alternate defense counsel was appointed. Even the PD said, what am I appointed for? Am I appointed for purposes of trial, which would be odd because the trial had already occurred, or for purposes of appeal? And then the court clarified and said for purposes of appeal. And even that's confusing because at that point there was nothing to appeal. And so,
And the defendant's responsible for all this?
Yes. He knew in October of 2002. He knew. I did not get a ruling on my motion. That was made very clear. The defense counsel conceded that today. In 2002, he waited, I believe, 6 years before filing anything. And even if it's true even if it's true.
Isn't the argument you're making now the argument that should be made on remand when you say he sat on his rights, he didn't do anything that he was required to do, he didn't ask for a ruling, he didn't do, I mean, all he's asking is for a hearing in which that can be heard.
Right.
And what you're telling us now is all of the reasons why latches, he should not be relieved from latches.
Correct.
Isn't that right?
But I think that this case presents the exact reason why we should require defendants to put these reasons in their motion. Because
which motion?
In their motion seeking a ruling. Once they finally ask for a ruling and the court says, no, latches, I'm not going to rule on your motion. In that motion seeking a ruling, or any motion where you're supposed to affirmatively establish justifiable excuse, that's where those allegations go. Otherwise, we're opening the door to defendants sitting there having all kinds of reasons, letting the court rule on the motion. He didn't even ask after the ruling for an opportunity like a motion to reconsider, just files an appeal. And now here we are years later, and now it's going to go back for a ruling. And so
the defendant has no obligation to file a motion seeking a ruling. The trial court has an obligation to decide the motion that's pending before it, right?
The court does.
For all we know, the file could have been lost for 6 years. Maybe that's why the case was, just hypothetically, and it had nothing to do with the defendant. We don't know what would show up if we had a remand hearing here, do we?
No, but the case law is also clear, and that's what I argued. You know, theoretically, you could resolve this case on abandonment, just the general abandonment principles. I cited two cases in my brief that says the defendant has an obligation to seek a ruling on his motion. And in particular here, where he's been told 2 years after he filed his motion, there's no ruling. He still did nothing. And still, to this day, has not, up until this day, has not made any effort to explain the delay. And we're just saying he should have had to explain the delay in his motion seeking the ruling. Thank you very much.
Does the court have any further questions?
One. Filed the motion for status conference. There was also a motion for proportionality review. I take it since you didn't brief it, that's not in front of us.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank both counsel for their arguments. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course.